Robin Hartz Love and Demetria Blackwell are two drag queens from Morgantown, West Virginia. Since March, they've been working together on their mask-making business, Mask for Mask, where they use their sewing skills to make high-quality, colorful face masks and sell them. For every mask that is purchased, another mask goes to a nonprofit organization. In addition to their work with Mask for Mask, Robin and Demetria are known for their Drag Queen Storytime YouTube channel, where they record themselves reading books with their puppet friend Renee the Book Beast for children and their families to watch at home. I've been trying to get around to having them on the show for a little while now, and I'm so excited to be able to showcase all the hard work they do for the LGBTQ+ community in Morgantown and West Virginia on this podcast. Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking time in your day. I saw that, Mask for Mask is getting, pretty popular. You guys just featured on local news. That's so exciting.
Twice.
Twice? I don't know the second time.
WVTV and WBOY both did a feature on us.
Wow, that's so exciting. What was that like?
It was very stressful at first because every other time Robin and I have been in the news together, it's been a stressful situation, but both articles, both pieces were fabulous. They did a really great job. So seeing the final product made all of that anxiety go away, but the nerves of getting through, oh God, what's this going to look like? Are people going to send us death threats again? Like, that was rough, but it all worked out.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it worked out well to have positive, pretty positive reception to it so far.
Hey, it's cool to be in the news for a good way.
Exactly. Exactly. So I usually start off the podcast with having the guests introduce themselves. Do you guys mind doing that?
No, not at all. I'm Robin Hartz Love. I'm the show director of Vice Versa. I'm a trans woman. I also do hair and makeup locally for a corporate salon. And
my name is Paul Liller. I'm the owner of Blackwell Enterprises, the co-owner with the lovely Robin here of the subsidiary Mask for Mask, Morgantown Mask for Mask. And I am a local drag queen, and yeah, that's about it. Nothing too exciting.
I think that's pretty exciting to me, though. That's all exciting stuff right there for me.
I'll tell you what, I'll trade you. You can have it all. You can have it all. I just want to go to a beach somewhere and not look at a sewing machine for a year.
Oh, man. The only thing I know how to sew is a button, so yeah. So Mask for Mask is kind of what you guys have been working on for the last couple of weeks. So how did Mask for Mask get started?
It started because I bought a mask online for a good deal, and I picked it up, and you could have read a newspaper behind a brick wall through this thing. It was so thin and cheaply made. And I got it and I looked at it. I sent a picture of it to Paul and I put it on and I literally heard it rip as I'm putting it on my ears. And I called him and I said, "Paul, I just bought a really crappy bunch of masks."
To which I interjected, I sew. Why did you spend money on masks when we could have made them here, no big deal?" So she said, "Okay, I'm on my way over." So she brings over these masks that are basically made of one step above pantyhose material. And I laughed. And so we made some masks. And somehow, just like every other harebrained idea that I get talked into,
I got a wonderful idea. Why don't we make and sell some of these? They're good masks.
And so Robin talks me into making and selling masks and donating masks. And I said to her, I said, Robin, there are so many people making masks. We'll never be busy with this. This is a bad idea. But just like every other idea you've had, I'll tag along for the ride. So I taught Robin how to use a sewing machine. And I work on my serger, and I serge the masks, which basically is a four-thread process where it cuts the fabric as it's sewing and loops the fabric. So it's kind of like the inside seam of your jeans. So it makes it a really durable material, a really durable stitch, so that it can be washed and reused. And then once the masks are constructed, I pass them over to Robin, who uses a sewing machine to put the straps on it.
And those are sent triple.
Yeah, so she does that three times to make sure that, again, the whole thing is durable and washable and reusable. And then she usually, or my fiance Steven, or her husband Adam, will trim all the strings. And they will pass our quality control and end up in a box to where they're all numbered. And, well, this is now. It wasn't that way before. But now they all go into numbered boxes. And then when it's time to order fulfillment, we just look at the little number on the box. They put a number in on the website form, and there we go. Prior to our lovely box idea, everything was shoved in Ziploc bags. And all of the Ziploc bags went in a tote, and it was like digging for buried gold every time we needed a mask. So I talked Robin into, see, Robin talks me into the ideas, but I'm always talking Robin into spending money.
Oh, I hate that.
And so that's kind of our trade-off, is that she gets me into trouble, but then I spend our money.
You know, we didn't used to like each other, right? I think we've told you that story before. Sometimes I think it would be easier, and it would definitely be cheaper if we were still enemies.
Yes, for sure. We spent a fortune revamping the website and getting the website redone. And to be honest, that was the money most well spent.
Yeah.
Because now, rather than having to navigate 100 Facebook messages to try to keep track, people fill out the form online. They tell us what they want to do. We get an email with everything all spelled out in the exact same way every time. So we're not looking at, you know, Karen says she wants 5 masks of various things. And then Sue says, oh, well, I'd like a couple of masks. And then you have to have a conversation with them and figure it out. This is easier. It's faster. It's much more streamlined. So we've got a pretty well-oiled machine. And I think the best part of this whole process has been seeing some of the nonprofits and some of the needy families that we've given the masks to, and how happy and relieved they were when they received them. For example, I took a bunch over to the Friendship House, and the gentleman that was working there was just beside himself with joy, because a lot of the people who are donating masks right now are sending them to hospitals, nursing homes, things like that. And so these nonprofits are getting forgotten about. So, you know, you've got the homeless population that needs help. You've got, you know, other places that need help, and they're just getting forgotten about. So this guy was thrilled. He was like, I can't believe you thought to call us. We're so happy. Thank you so much. And then when Robin and I spoke with the Bartlett House, they too were thrilled. They're like, we have like 40 some regulars plus staff. So we put them together a bag of 50 or 60. I don't even remember how many were in the bag. And at the Bartlett House, they actually have the capability to wash for them. They have washing machines and stuff there. So they're able to be reused and rewashed daily. And they were thrilled. They were like, man, this is great. When Robin and I took them over, the fellow that took them from us was just, it made me feel good knowing I was helping, you know?
Delegate Danielle Walker, we gave her a bunch, and she distributed them to families and essential workers that needed them but can't afford them because, you know, you're essential enough to keep our economy and our world running, but, I mean, they're still underpaid. They're not valued at what they're worth, for sure. So it's important to make sure that everyone that has the need to be protected, whether they can afford it or not, is protected.
Absolutely. You guys you both stole the question right out of my mouth. I was about to ask, like, because it's, you know, you'll buy a mask and then another mask gets donated. I was about to ask where the masks go that you donate, but you guys covered that.
And we've still got others going out. Like, we've got some going to an LGBT group in Pittsburgh that's doing a mask drive. We've got an assisted living home, not a nursing home, but more like a group home environment that has a call out for 400 masks. I don't think we're going to be able to fulfill all of those because we've just got so many going different places right now. But we're definitely going to put a big dent in that. And I know that a lot of the local mask makers are doing it too, because we've got, you know, a few friends, Danielle Bryan, Justin Click, Linda Lukenbaugh, right off the top of my head. They just sit and sew masks all day for individuals and families and give them away.
Yeah. And I did hear about Justin Click just got, like, you know, a donation from Ellen DeGeneres, so that's pretty cool to see that recognition.
That really, really cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So
put out 300 masks, and sitting by yourself at home making mask after mask after mask, that's impressive.
Absolutely. You said that he made 300? Sorry, I cut out when you said, all I heard was 300.
Yeah, he said that he thinks that he had made 300 so far.
Jeez, that's crazy. And that's awesome, of course. Wow.
And I have to brag on Robin and I's well-oiled machine here just for a minute, just because...
Go for it.
I'm so proud. When this started to take off, Robin and I had the conversation, and I said, you know, I have always been a person that doesn't want to put something out that's not the highest of quality. And I think our masks are locally some of the best made masks you can get. I think that they've stood the test of many, many washes. We've had people send us pictures of, like, after 10 washes, how they look brand new and all this stuff. But we are able, on a good day, Robin and I can sit down and pump out 300 to 400 masks in a day if we have to. In a day.
Wow.
But now, I mean, it's also because we now have 2 sergers and a total of 4 sewing machines that we can work from. So we can have 1 or 2 people cutting the fabric. I can be serging. We have another serger, if somebody else knows how to serge, that can do that. Robin can sew the straps, and somebody else can do the straps. And so we're able to pump out a massive amount, especially now that we're in this new space. And the landlord where I live actually donated this to us. All we do is we pay for the electric that he would pay down here. And having the big space to work from and to spread out and to have separate areas for everything has really sped up our operation a lot.
We were doing manufacturing in Demetria's drag room. We were doing, well, Paul, we were doing, at the end, order fulfillment out of the living room and cutting in the living room. And I don't know how we functioned that way, but we did. We were able to maintain same day turnaround the whole time, which I don't think that anybody locally can still do. And then when we got down here, it's been great because we're able to start taking volunteers and kind of spread things out. The dream is, since we do have 2 sergers, is to find someone with some sewing experience that can operate the other one, because we would like to divide it into 2 halves, the portion that we sell that helps fund the donations, but also one side that just makes donation masks all day long, so that we're pumping out mask for mask literally simultaneously.
Wow. I think that is a really impressive operation. Holy crap.
We have the space to do it. I mean, we've got a huge space, and we probably use maybe a third of it currently.
Yeah.
That's still amazing to hear that. I was wondering, like, how you both got that space to work in. That, you know, guys keep, you both keep, you know, You guys keep reading my mind or something. Like, or am I just that predictable?
No, we've done a few of these interviews.
I figured just a couple. And a couple for me. So we probably know how I'm going to ask these things.
We work with you so much, we know what you like.
Get it.
Exactly. So how is the reception? I mean, I know this reception's been, you know, crazy with like people coming, like, asking for masks, but do you mind talking a little bit more about the reception that you two have received to Mask for Mask?
It's been great. It's been completely opposite of what our media exposure has been to in the past. We've got people that will call in and drop off fabric to donate. Someone mailed us fabric and elastic and cash for anything else we needed to put towards making more masks for people. It's been amazing. It's been wonderful.
And we get a lot of customers that will email us or phone call us or send us Facebook pictures or whatever of how much they love the masks, which is nice. I mean, we're getting real-time feedback of what we can do. And we had a gentleman who felt comfortable enough with us that he wanted to work with us on a project. We're trying to work on what we're going to call the beard buster mask. And so for guys that have real long beards and stuff, being able to give them the protection. So it's a project that we're still working on, but we have enough trust in the community that people feel like they can come to us with these ideas and we can help them. And that to me is priceless, because Robin and I have been trying so hard to do good in the community. And it feels like finally now we're making some headway and getting a little bit of the good karma from all the stuff that we've tried to do without all of the backlash that we've been getting.
Agreed. And someone actually shared one of our news stories last week, and they said, you know, these are the same people that the community lambasted for wanting to read to children last year. And I just responded, we're just trying to be the good we want to see in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, you were doing awesome stuff with Drag Queen Storytime and still are doing awesome stuff with that, but
a release that's recorded. We just haven't had time to edit it yet because things got so crazy. We've still got several books that we would like to do, and, you know, it was either lives or actual weekly releases. It's just the masks have overtaken every corner, crevice, and cranny in our life.
We work
that makes sense. Yeah.
Most days from 9 to 10 in the morning till almost 9 o'clock at night. And just this Sunday will be the first day we've actually taken off since the masks started, where we've started closing on Sundays, but it's been every single day.
How long have you both been working on Mask for Mask for again? I totally, days, time means nothing. Time means nothing anymore. Almost a month, you said?
Yeah.
Sorry, time is just weird these days, isn't it? Forget what day it is, you know?
Post-apocalyptic world.
And it especially doesn't exist in front of a sewing machine or a surgery.
No.
Robin and I get lost. We look at each other, and I swear sometimes we forget our own names. Because all we know is the hum of the machines and push and push and push.
Was it last Saturday I was sitting here at the machine and just zoned out, and Demetria said, "You taking a break, sis?" And I went, "Oh, well, I guess I am."
Man, I mean, I'm glad that you both are taking a break this Sunday, you know, day of rest, all that good stuff. You two deserve it, because you've been doing a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm just watching, like, the stuff on your Facebook page and all of these posts, and I gotta order a mask. I have a mask of my own, but it's kind of boring. Yeah, so Vice is obviously closed. How's that been like for you both as, you know, entertainers and performers most of the time to not, you know, have that stage, you know?
I think it's different for us because we don't have a chance to think about it.
Yeah, but Robin said it best in one of the interviews that we did with one of the TV stations, and she said that if this were a different kind of crisis where we were allowed to all join together, the drag queens would be the ones getting together and doing benefit shows to raise money and things like that. And so, you know, for us, and I guess selfishly because we now have the ability to sew and not all drag queens do and things like that, we're still able to get that feeling of giving back that drag queens have done since the beginning of time. back when dinosaurs put on leaves for wigs and did drag, that, you know, we are still helping out and we're still doing what we can to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for us, it's great. I know a lot of entertainers are chomping at the bit because they're so used to the stage and the fun and the excitement. And don't get me wrong, I'm really enjoying facial hair and not having to shave so hard. And my face is liking that there's not makeup on it as much. So the break from the every week hosting advice has been a nice little break, but I miss it. I miss the people. I miss the human interaction.
I think that we kind of mentioned this before last time we did an interview, and that's basically that it's going to be really important to not let the virtual shows and everything become the new normal, because there are going to be a lot of entertainers and a lot of club owners that are going to depend on people to support them when we get back. And that's important because the LGBTQ community has always had these bars as a staple for as long as, I don't know, gosh, forever. But without those there, there's really no physical place for a lot of these people to get out and express themselves and feel safe. That is a space that is specifically for them.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important not to let the virtual way of doing things become the new normal.
I miss Vice so much. I mean, every week I watch Bitch Pudding's drag show on Twitch. And that, you know, like you kind of like a regular routine. I go out to the shows Friday or Saturday. But like, obviously not the same to, you know, have that interaction, see both of you, see all the other performers, you know, miss that so much.
That's actually one of the bar stools. We've got a pretty high counter for cutting out here in the main part of the workroom. And when we saw him, they miss everybody too, but they want to make sure that it's safe.
Absolutely.
They reopened. So that feels good to know that they care enough about the community to make sure that, you know, everybody would like to be able to get together, but it's got to be safe. It's got to be right. The timing has to be right.
Yeah.
And I mean, personally for me, I think that our government on all levels from state to federal is leading us down the road. But we won't get into that. That's another podcast for another day.
Yeah. That's another several podcast episodes right there. Right. Oh boy. But yeah, I mean, one thing that I've always loved about Vice is like how safe it is there. I remember I was there for the Halloween party, not this past one, but the last one before that. It was when there's like shots fired outside of the club. I mean, I felt super safe inside of Vice, like, you know, on how well it was handled. And I mean, there's been times, I mean, there was a time when I was taking photos of, I think it was the night that you two were announcing the drag queen story time. Some drunk guy tried to take my camera away, you know, someone checked in and made sure that I was okay. And like, you know, asked me to point out the person in case, you know, he bothered me again. So like, vice versa, absolutely. I have no doubt that, you know, the owners, you know, Montez and Papa Bear, they all care so much about, you know, keeping everyone safe. I'd have no doubt about that whatsoever as a patron.
I don't know if you were coming out yet or not when the Pulse Massacre happened in Florida. Were you coming out?
I was in high school. That was actually about a year before I realized I was gay. So.
Yeah. Even going on stage after that, we were afraid it was going to become the start of a thing like school shooting. You know what I mean? But even going on stage after that, we still felt safe as entertainers.
Yeah. Because they really took it seriously. They weren't. A lot of places were like, oh, it was just a one-time thing. It'll never happen. And that's the one thing with James and Taz is that they didn't take it that way. They took it very seriously, and they went over with all the staff what to do. They kept a game plan in operation, and everybody knew what that game plan was. And we all felt, you know, you can't take the unknown portion out of that equation of will somebody show up? Is there somebody that is going to do that? But knowing that there is such a detailed and organized plan for safety, definitely made things feel amazing.
And because of that, you had the experience you had on Halloween a couple years ago. There were shots fired outside. There was a plan. Everyone was able to remain calm. And no one really felt alarmed by it.
Yeah.
We all knew what to do. It wasn't a panic.
Absolutely. That's one of the many, many, many reasons why I love Vice so much. And, you know, why I'm excited for when it's safe enough for all of us to get together and have a good old time together. Thank you both so much. You know, you're both doing such awesome things for our community always, and right now, especially in this crisis, you two are doing some awesome stuff. So thank you again for taking time out of your busy day to chat with me. This is really nice.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you and everything you do.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to support Mask for Mask, I've included their website in the description for this episode. As always, you can follow Queer Mountaineers on Twitter at Queer Ears Pod, ears is spelled with two E's, Instagram at Queer Mountaineers Podcast, and like the Facebook page to stay up to date on this podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.